probably not sad about it, but the overseas oil cartel says these low crude prices could really hurt America's domestic oil production.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and the economy. U.S. oil producers think they can weather currently low crude prices, even though the technology needed to extract oil from shale in places like Montana is expensive. But OPEC, the foreign oil producers' cartel, thinks differently. The Secretary General of OPEC said in London that if crude stays at $85 a barrel, lots of investment and production of shale will go away. This would hurt America's campaign for more so-called energy independence. Crude this morning is down 1% to $81.40 a barrel. Low oil prices are also cutting into oil company profits, as we've been reporting this week. But today, Shell said its refining operations offset declining prices, and its quarterly profits beat expectations. Now let's do some more numbers. The 100-share index in London is down 0.8%. The key stock index in Hong Kong fell 0.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down. Now to the politics of mixing fizzy drinks at home. SodaStream, based in Israel, today released its quarterly profits and something else. The BBC's Jonathan Frewen is following this from London.
SodaStream's put out its latest results. The figures are pretty poor. Their sales are down 9%. But the thing that's caught people's eyes is that it's closing a controversial factory in the West Bank, which in one context is praised because it employs Israeli Arabs, Palestinians and Israeli Jews on the same pay and same benefits. But it's in a controversial location that critics say makes the prospect of a Palestinian state even more remote. So the company has closed it down.
The question is why?
The boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, the BDS movement that is critical of Israel, is claiming credit. It's saying that this is a victory. Now, the company sees it rather differently than that. They say the move's about cutting costs and taking advantage of $20 million of grants in the new area. But maybe it's not that simple. In an interview at the beginning of the year, the boss of SodaStream did admit that the plant had become a thorn in the side of the company. So there is clearly some reputational damage that's been done.
The BBC's Jonathan Frewen. Thank you. Imagine if you had a new boss every few years. That's happening in many of our schools. Half of new principals leave in their third year on the job. A new report looks at how much of the cost of this turnover is to schools and kids from the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR. Amy Scott reports.
Heather Wolpert-Guerin has been teaching for 11 years at Jefferson Middle School in San Gabriel, California.
And I believe we've had about 10 principals.
Some have left on their own. Some have been removed. The turnover has taken its toll on teachers.
We had many years where the morale was low. We just kind of felt abandoned.
The nonprofit School Leaders Network provides support and coaching for principals. In a new report, the group says the job has become too complex and isolating. Principals put in long hours overseeing teachers, meeting with parents, and implementing one reform after another. The group's Mariah Cohn says it costs about $75,000 to recruit and train each replacement, but the cost to student achievement is higher.
Studies have shown that both math and English language arts performance drops, and that it takes up to 3 to 5 years for the next principal to really be able to show gains.
If the next principal lasts that long, Cohn says ongoing mentoring and training might help more of them stay longer. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
In 5 days, the polls will be open in the U.S., and with gains for Republicans predicted but not assured, let's turn to a person who tracks the future of the federal budget, like a gearhead follows cars. Stan Collender contributes to Forbes and tweets at The Budget Guy. Stan, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good to talk to you, as always.
So with the midterm elections in just a couple days, I'm going to lob the conventional wisdom at you. If there is a Republican majority in the Senate combined with the House still controlled by the GOP, you figure there's going to be a lot of budget cutting next year in Washington, right?
You might say that, but you'd be wrong. The House will get a little bit more conservative and will try to go after Medicare, Medicaid, and maybe Social Security. The Senate, which may get more Republican, as you suggested, is not going to be in the mood to consider those kinds of extreme changes because 24 of the 34 Republicans up for re-election in 2016, they're not going to be able to vote for those big cuts because they'll be politically untenable.
Now, what about my favorite word in the English language, sequestration? How does that play out in your argument that there may not be a budget-cutting spree next year?
Well, first of all, if that's your favorite word in the English language, we got to get you out more. Okay, that's the first thing. But there's already a big push in the defense community to do away with the potential for a sequester, that is, across-the-board cuts in military spending. The problem is that there are a whole lot of members who are willing to raise the cap on defense spending, but they're only willing to do it if there's an increase in domestic spending at the same time.
Something else I wanted to ask you about, I was just reading an argument that this election may not be about the economy, as is typical. It may be about Ebola. That could affect government's willingness to spend or cut.
Not could, it will. First of all, the NIH and CDC are already expected to get an increase because they've been underfunded or cut back a great deal in the past. But every other agency on the domestic side of the budget, transportation, homeland security, education, health and human services, they're all going to find some way of being involved in the Ebola fight. I expect there'll be pockets of Ebola money all over the domestic side of the budget just to deal with it in every way possible.
Once upon a time, Mr. Colander was a staffer for both the House and Senate Budget Committees. Stan Colander is now Executive VP at Corvus MSL Group. Stan, thank you.
My pleasure.
And what would you do with a bank error in your favor? Credit Suisse says it mistakenly wired $1.5 million to a hedge fund. The New York Times today has the story of the fund manager who is now living with a second wife somewhere overseas, possibly Monaco. Credit Suisse is suing to get the money back. The hedge fund guy says the accusations are ridiculous. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.